Welcome to another edition of the Romance Program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sunsounds. I've got one story coming up this hour I hope you'll enjoy. It's from True Romance Magazine called Let's Get Her, Our Sexy Neighbor Has Got to Go. Here's the story. Everyone in our neighborhood had similar lives. Most of us were married with kids, and our houses in the subdivision were all variations of the same plan. We were all about the same age, flirting with 30 or a few years older, just barely making it financially, and we all had dreams of better lives in the future. The only real exception was Mrs. Olson, who was 80 years old and lived in what I thought was the most gracious house on the block. It was a big brick home built in the 40s by her husband. He died after the children left home, leaving Mrs. Olson by herself in the big house. She was a lovely person, and we all enjoyed talking with her as we strolled or walked our babies past her house, with its big, wide, welcoming porch. Sometimes I would stop to visit with her for a while, but usually I was too busy or too tired to take the time. There were a few working mothers on our block, but most of us stayed home with our young children. Most of the men were employed in one way or another for the huge computer software company about 5 miles out of town. We all made good money, some more than others, but we all thought our prospects were good. We just had to be patient. It was a good life in many ways. I enjoyed the company of the other women, especially during the daytime. We women had dreams of a future that often involved a career of our own. It was fun to share our fantasies. Nothing seemed impossible or out of reach for us, or at least that's what we told one another. My own best pal, Georgia, lived across the street from me. I saw her every day, and our kids played together, as did our husbands, Brent and Charlie. Charlie, I said once to my husband, sometimes I think you have more fun just driving to work with your buddies than I have all day long. Huh, he said, flipping an apple in the air. You should talk. You and Georgia are a match set. God knows what you two are up to while we're working. We're up to our eyebrows in diapers and dishes, I said dryly. That's what you want us to believe, he said, biting into the apple with a smile. I was used to Charlie and the way he teased me all the time. In fact, it was one of the most endearing traits, except when I wanted him to be serious. He usually made me smile, and that time was no exception, so I answered back with a quip of my own. I hope you guys don't figure out what we really do with our time, because if you do, we'll have to kill you. Charlie snorted, spitting part of his apple across the room. Some things are worth dying for, he said. I loved being around jokesters like Charlie and Georgia because I had more of a serious nature. Humor didn't come easily to me. Georgia had a wicked imagination and a wonderful, wacky side that I admired. That year, Georgia and I spent most of those early summer days together with our kids, so I wasn't surprised to see her running across the street to my house fairly early in the morning one day. She rapped on the door, then opened it before I could call for her to come in. Guess what happened? She said in a breathless voice. Mrs. Olson died. Her son found her body this morning. Oh, no, I said, genuinely sorry. We'll all miss her. I know, but what about her house? Georgia said as she grabbed a muffin from the table. I wonder what they'll do with that house. Really, Georgia, I said, let's please show a little respect for the loss of that nice lady without wondering about her house. Like you wouldn't love to have it yourself. I would, but we couldn't afford to fix it up the way I would want to do it. Georgia shrugged, but she already looked bored with the conversation as she yawned. Oh, well, at least we'll have something different to talk about for a while, she said. Well, I intend to go to Mrs. Olson's service if she has one. I really liked her, I said primly. Good idea. Then we can go shopping or to lunch or something fun afterwards. I totally give up on you, lady, I said as Georgia headed out the door with a wave of her hand. About a month later, workmen started showing up at the house. Then one day a huge moving van appeared. I peeked out my window several times, but I couldn't see much. I decided to take my kids, Jordy and Megan, over to Georgia's house for a playtime with her two boys. Besides, Georgia had a wraparound deck at her house, and I knew her view of the movers would be excellent. Georgia yelled for us to come in, and I found her already out on her deck, watching everything that was going on at the Olsen house. I finally got the kids settled in the playroom. Then I joined her on the deck. What's going on? I asked impatiently. I don't see any signs of the actual buyers. All I can see are swarthy moving men. I knew I came to the right place, I said as I scrunched in next to her. Wow, Georgia said. Check out that living room furniture. I mean, that is Bradford Dunn stuff, the real Bradford Dunn. Wait a minute, she said, gripping my arm. There's a car stopping in front of the house. It's a woman driving. We both leaned forward to see better as a tall, blonde woman got out of the car and seemed to glide up the front walk. Wow, Georgia said. I hope that's the realtor and not the new owner. She's too beautiful for us to even try to like her. Maybe she just looks great from a distance, I said. Yeah, maybe she isn't long-legged, stacked with shining, gorgeous hair when you get up really close. I laughed. You know what I mean. We watched in silence as the woman stood talking to the movers. She had their attention completely. I even saw one guy take off his baseball hat and smooth his hair. One of our kids let out a scream, and we forced ourselves away from our porch to go check out the latest grievance. As soon as we had the kids settled down with crayons and cookies, we dashed back to the deck, but the car with the mysterious woman was gone. I wish that mover with the dark hair was moving in himself, Georgia sighed. He's hot. I am too, I said. I think I'll go home, turn up our air conditioner, and dream of owning Bradford Dunn. Go for broke, Georgia said. Throw in Brad Pitt, too. Later that day, when Charlie was home, I told him what little I knew about our new neighbors. I can't believe you in Georgia, he said as he stabbed a sliced tomato. Is that all you've got to do all day is spy on the neighbors? Well, that wasn't quite my whole day. I did fantasize about going to bed with a good-looking famous designer. Charlie gave me a look and waited for what I was going to say next. Those neighbors have Bradford Dunn furniture. I would kill for a gorgeous bedroom set made by his company. Oh, dear God, he sighed. I can't believe some men really want to learn to think like a woman. Life caught me up in a tornado of activity for the next few days, so with the exception of a few hurried glances at the Olsen house as I drove by, I couldn't much tell what was happening there. I did see all kinds of vans and trucks, so I assumed work was still being done. I was even too busy to talk to Georgia. My kids both had standing dentist appointments in 3 consecutive days. That's a lot of social life for a 3- and 5-year-old, because they also had birthday parties to go to. Georgia finally caught up with me, bursting with news about the neighbors. They are having massive work done on the inside, she gushed. I was baking Charlie's favorite lemon cake, so I listened while I worked. "What about kids?" I asked. "Oh, I don't think they have kids, but guess what? The dishy blonde we saw is the lady of the house." Georgia threw her arms in the air. "Can you imagine how our husbands are going to love mowing the lawn when she's outside?" I laughed and reached for some sodas in the fridge. I handed Georgia one and sat down next to her. "Is this the best you can offer? Don't you even have a beer?" I ignored her and said, "Maybe the guy's gorgeous too." I took a long swig of the Coca-Cola drink and relished how good it tasted. "Maybe you and I will get suddenly interested in golfing." "As if," Georgia said. "I tried to get some information from some of the workers over there, but they are a clueless bunch." "You didn't go over there," I cried. "Oh, yes, I did. The dog needed walking, and that's where he led me." "You have more brass, but I love it. Tell me more." "Well, if you want the truth, they were all too busy to talk to me. It may have been that they were afraid of my poodle, or perhaps it was the extra 20 pounds around my middle that deflected their interest in me. Nevertheless, they were mostly silent. That didn't stop me from peeking inside, though. What does the house look like now? Are there any big changes?" Georgia looked disappointed for a moment, then said, "Not really. I only saw ladders, paint cans, and drop cloths." She sighed and stood up. "Are you going to ladies' night on Friday?" "Wouldn't miss it," I said, and pointed to the oven where the cake smells were emanating. "I'm making Charlie this cake as a reminder he has to stay home with the kids." Ladies' night was once a month, and most of the women in the neighborhood came. We went to a restaurant or a play or just somewhere fun, and it was only women. The guys griped about it some, but they didn't dare say too much because they had their precious golf days and ball games. Besides, they knew protesting was futile. Charlie loved to tease me about those nights. "What do you women do?" he asked. "Why do you fuss so much about your hair and nails and what outfit to wear? Do you go hustle guys or something?" I turned to look at him and said, "Only the very young buff ones." He laughed and threw a pillow at me. "I'll bet you gossip and yak about your sex lives. Hey, you'd better not be telling them anything about our private lives. That would tick me off. Besides, I don't want all the neighborhood chicks over here begging me for just a taste of my magic." "Charlie," I sighed and threw the pillow back at him. "If you only knew how little we think about any of you, it would surprise you." I slipped on my jacket. "Why don't you come with us? I think tonight Maddie Combs is going to show us her hysterectomy scars." "Yummy," he said, getting off the bed where he was stretched out. He walked over and took me in his arms. "Take pictures," he said, tweaking my nose. I drove with Georgia and we sped through the streets, both of us loving the sense of a night out. There was a warm, seductive feeling in the night air. Georgia blasted the radio. "You look good," Georgia shouted at me, pointing at my new yellow summer dress. "Yellow looks great with your dark hair." I made a face, but I straightened up and checked my hair in the rearview mirror as I did. "We both look good," I shouted back, clapping my hands to the music. Georgia and I were the first ones to arrive. The waiter led us to a round table close to the back, reserved in our names. Georgia hadn't even completely sat down before she told the waiter, "I'd like a drink." He smiled and turned to me. "White wine," I said. As he walked away, Georgia turned to me and said, "You know, I don't think I have ever seen you drink anything stronger than beer or wine, and you do very little of either." I shrugged my shoulders. "Hey, what can I say? I'm not crazy about the taste." "You have got to be kidding. Anyone who cares about the taste... Oh, anyway, who cares about the taste?" What about the loose feeling booze gives you? I felt myself blush as I had a terrible secret I was about to reveal. To tell you the truth, Georgia, it doesn't do much for me except make me sleepy. You are such a good girl. How come we like each other so much when we're so different? Before I could answer, the rest of our group came in and the chattering and laughing began. I love your hair that way, someone said. Everyone was talking at once. Drinks were ordered all around and we studied the menu and talked nonstop. Once our drinks were all served and our dinners ordered, the talk became more coherent as one person talked at a time. Hey, does anyone know any new dish about the new neighbors? I asked. Georgia raised her hand and said, I do. I got some information out of my strong, silent husband the other night. Tell, we all said. The guy works in Brent's department. His name is John Bailey. He's working on contract as an efficiency expert for the company. Georgia paused and took a drink from her frosty glass, then smacking her lips. His wife is a weather girl during the daytime on a television station here in the city. Her name is Sheila. A kind of celebrity, then, one of the women said. The closest thing we have in our neighborhood, that's for sure, Georgia said, and Tina and I have seen her. She's gorgeous. They are quite rich and they have no kids. A lack of stunned disbelief came over the crowd of women, including me. Is she as young as she looks from a distance? I asked, hoping for some straw to cling to. Younger, Georgia said. I gave Georgia a friendly push on her shoulder. Oh, you don't know that, I said. You're spinning this story a lot, I think. Georgia shrugged and laughed. She's not like us. That's all we need to know, she proclaimed. She waved for the waiter and ordered another drink. I take satisfaction in reminding myself that if we really try, we can soon find something deliciously wrong with her. If we don't, she said with a sigh, I make no promises for her safety. Everyone laughed at her words, including me. We were all used to Georgia and her outrageous statements and behavior. It was what defined her. I had noticed before that night that Georgia was drinking more than usual. However, and I reminded myself to tell her at the right time that she didn't need to drink. She was so much fun without it. In fact, she was much more fun when she wasn't drinking. That night, she drank too much and got sloppy and silly, but it was nearly time to go, so no one paid very much attention to her, or so I thought. I took the car keys from Georgia as we left the restaurant, and she didn't object. On the drive home, her words were slurred and her head nodded. She was singing to the radio when she turned to me and said, I'll tell you one thing, Tina. If that new neighbor of ours isn't careful, she may wind up on my list. I don't like perfect people. With a snicker of glee, she added, that's why I love you so dearly. Very funny, I said. We were just about home when Georgia started to cry. I sighed and tried to remain patient because I'd seen her like this before. You know, I love my kids and all. I even love Brent, but sometimes when I'm alone in the car or driving like this with you, I just want to keep going. Like the movie Thelma and Louise, I asked. No thanks. If I'm going to go downhill, I can do it on my own. Georgia didn't answer. I turned to look at her and saw that she was crying very hard. What's wrong? Oh, what isn't? Georgia sobbed. I pulled the car over and stopped the engine. Tell me, I urged. Georgia buried her face in her hands. It's all make-believe, all our lives. I don't know one person who's happy. I'm happy, I said, and I thought you were too most of the time. Do you think our husbands Are happy? She asked, refusing to look at me. The night air was warm and soft. Yeah, I guess so, I said at a loss for words. Are you and Brent having trouble? Not anything I can put my finger on. She was trying hard to compose herself now. I don't know. I don't think he likes me very much these days. Maybe he has someone else. No way, I said. Well, maybe not. Let's just go home. The days flew by as summer wound down. There was a snap to the night air, an indication of fall coming. My oldest, Jordy, would be going to kindergarten, and I wanted to prepare him and myself for the big change ahead. I spent a lot of time alone with my two kids, so I didn't see all that much of Georgia. One day, as I drove with my kids past the Olsen place, I glanced over to my astonishment and saw it was occupied. When I got home, I called Georgia on the phone and asked her what she knew. She seemed distant and uninterested. Yeah, they moved in a couple weeks ago. She's gorgeous, even up close. And to make matters worse, she has class. Yep, there is no hope. Are you all right? I asked her. Sure, why not? Just wondering, I said. When Charlie came home from work that night, I asked him if he knew the man who was our new neighbor. Sure, he said. You mean John Bailey? Didn't I tell you? We're invited to their housewarming this weekend. I thought I mentioned it. No, you didn't, I said. Did he just ask you at work? Well, no, not exactly, Charlie said. His wife hand-delivered the invitation to me last Saturday when I was working in the yard. I see. What do you think? I think we should go, he said, looking a bit bewildered. I swatted him on the head with a dish towel. I mean, what did you think of her? Is she gorgeous enough for you? His face went red. I didn't notice, he said. He didn't notice, I said to the wall, rolling my eyes. Well, where do you put it? I asked. His face flamed a deeper red. He spun around sharply. Put what? The invitation, I said, unable to stifle my laughter. Oh, I don't know, he said, scratching his head. I didn't give it to you. Oh, I give up, I said, and went to see what the kids were screaming about. Everyone I talked to about the upcoming party seemed excited to the point of giddiness. I can't wait to see the house, Maddie Combs said when I ran into her in the grocery store. What are you wearing? I haven't really thought about it, I lied. I had a new blue pantsuit that I thought looked great in, and I planned to have my hair and nails done on Saturday morning. The only person I talked with, outside of Charlie, who maintained a blasé attitude about the event, was Georgia. I can't understand why you, of all people, aren't just raging with excitement about this party, I said to her one afternoon when I walked over to see her. What's up with that? Georgia stood up and walked to the window. She held the curtain aside as she gazed out. For a moment, she didn't speak. Finally, she turned to me and said, I don't know, Tina. Things aren't very good between Brent and me these days. All I need is to go to a house where Mrs. Perfect lives and let him compare her to me. Guess who loses? I looked at my friend carefully. She had lost weight and there were dark circles under her eyes. What's wrong exactly? I said. Let's have a drink and change the subject, Georgia said. She started to pour herself a splash of gin in a glass, but she stopped suddenly. Will you be my friend and have a drink with me? I am your friend, but you know I don't drink that stuff. Fine, she said as she walked to the sink and poured the gin down the drain. She turned to me. Is there anything else on your mind? If not, I really should get back to whatever it was I was doing before you came in. I left feeling hurt and somehow guilty. I stopped and looked back at George's house when I got across the street. I knew it was probably my imagination, but the house seemed dark. It even seemed to sag a little. I shook my head. I would just have to wait Georgia out, I thought. If she and Brent weren't getting along, it would account for her moodiness. The night of the party, I felt glamorous for the first time in months. My hair looked shiny and dark, piled high and held with a pretty comb. My blue pants suit fit just right, and my brand new dark blue shoes didn't pinch at all. "Mommy, you look so pretty," Jordy said, blinking his eyes. "Yes, Mommy, you do," Charlie said. "Now do I look pretty too?" "You look pretty good," I said, straightening his shirt collar. "I feel like we're heading for Las Vegas instead of just down the street." "Let's stay home and pretend we are in Vegas," he said. "I'm great at stud poker." "We're going to the party." I took his hand. We decided to walk to the party since it was so near. The night was soft and mellow, with just the traces of cool September breezes brushing by. "Aren't we picking up Georgia and Brent?" Charlie asked. I shook my head. "No, I don't know what's going on with those two, but Georgia said they might be late if they came at all." "I noticed that Brent has been missing a lot of work lately," Charlie said. "You did? Why didn't you mention it?" I cried out. Charlie turned to me with a blank expression. "I didn't imagine that you were interested in Brent's work schedule." "I am interested in Georgia," I said, "and something's going on." My concern about Georgia vanished the moment we walked up the wide stone steps to the Olson house. There was soft music coming from inside, and as we rang the bell, the sound of laughter and talking beckoned us. Sheila Bailey opened the door, and both Charlie and I stood there speechless, as though we were looking at royalty. To say that Sheila was beautiful was to say the ocean is wet. No cool, composed blonde was she, but a bona fide bombshell. Her hair was almost silver in the light from the house. Her blue eyes were like dark crystals, and her skin was luminous and lush. There was a sexiness about her that could not be denied, combined with a certain classic beauty, and when she smiled, a warm, heartfelt smile, the deal was complete. She was perfect. Suddenly, I felt frumpy in my new pantsuit. I took Charlie's arm for reassurance as she held the door and beckoned us inside. With a soft tinkle of a laugh, she said, "I know Charlie, of course. He has the cutest knees." Charlie blushed and looked down at his knees as if checking to see if he still had his yard work shorts on. "I may have them insured," he joked. "You should," she said, taking his other arm and moving him, oh so casually, out of my reach. "Come, I want you to meet some people I don't think you know." Charlie walked with her, leaving me standing there. For a moment, I was angry at both of them, but just then, a gorgeous man with dark hair and broad shoulders came up to me. "You must be Tina Workman," he said. "I'm John Bailey. Charlie talks so fondly of you." He took me gently by my arm and guided me over to a huge bar. "What's your pleasure?" he asked me. "I don't drink much," I said. "Do you just have some white wine?" "Absolutely," he said, and in an instant I was holding the chilled wine glass in my hand. John didn't let go of my arm until I was safely among some of my neighbors. "Wow," Arlene Bradford said, "is this house beautiful or what? I can't believe it's the same place," I said, whispering the words. "I am in awe." We stood in our familiar huddle, staring at the other guests who looked like people from the pages of fashion magazines. "I guess the big city has come to our little burb," I said. I noticed the man from our neighborhood clutched together too, but I also noticed their eyes followed Sheila's every move, and my Charlie was no exception. Every so often she would come and talk to the guys, and they would all stand up straighter. I swear I could see them all suck their stomachs in at the same time. I was glad to see Georgia and Brent finally make an appearance. Georgia didn't wait for formalities, but headed for the bar. I noticed Brent stood and glowered at her. Then, with a dismissive shrug, he joined the other guys as Sheila came up to greet him. Georgia came over to where we women were standing. I stared at her in astonishment. For the first time since I'd known Georgia, she really looked a mess. She was wearing a nice dress, but it was wrinkled and the buttons were done up wrong. "Here," I whispered to her, "turn around and let me get your buttons straight." Georgia took a big gulp of her drink. "If my husband would touch me, he could have done it," she said. I knew the other women would be gossiping about Georgia. I suddenly felt very protective of her. I walked her out of the front porch. "What's going on with you?" "I need another drink. That's what's going on. How can you stand being sober in the presence of such perfection?" I gave a little laugh, hoping to distract Georgia. "I don't know who Sheila reminds me of, but it isn't anyone I know personally," I said, trying to keep my voice light. "She is like a movie star or something. Can you imagine the work it must be to keep up such a facade?" I hoped Georgia would respond with her usual on-the-mark quips, but instead she started to cry. "I'll tell you who she reminds me of. She reminds me of Brent's new girlfriend, that's who." I was shocked by her words, but not totally surprised. "How do you know this?" "I saw him with her. She looks just like Sheila, only younger." She turned to me and looked me in the eyes. "I saw them after I followed my husband. He's going to leave me, and there's nothing I can do to stop him." With those words, she stumbled back inside and headed for the bar. I went over to where Charlie was standing with Brent and said, "Brent, I think Georgia needs to go home." "Let her go," he snarled. Charlie looked at me and raised his eyebrows. I whispered to him that I was going to try to get Georgia out of there before she made a scene. "I'll help," he said softly. Then he took my arm and walked over to where Georgia stood. "Let's go home," Charlie said, taking Georgia's arm. "Why, Charlie, are you asking to take me home right in front of your loving wife?" She put her arms through Charlie's and started walking toward the door. "Can no man in this room be trusted?" I followed them out of the house, and together Charlie and I got her home. Charlie took the babysitter home while I got Georgia upstairs. She was limp now, as if she'd been suddenly deflated, and she did not protest when I put her into bed. "Sleep it off, Georgia. Let's talk tomorrow." "Right," she said, followed by a little hiccup, or by a loud hiccup. "We'll talk. Let's talk about getting that perfect Sheila. Let's get her and pay back all the perfect women in the world." "Okay, we'll talk about it." Charlie and I walked across the street together with our arms around each other. There was no need for words between us. We both felt terrible about the obvious problems Brent and Georgia were having. and we had no solutions. The next few months passed, and Georgia seemed more strung out and desperate with each passing day. On the occasions we saw Sheila and John, Sheila, in contrast to Georgia, just looked better and better. "It isn't fair," Georgia said one night. "We don't invite that perfect bitch to our ladies' nights, and she doesn't even care. It's impossible to get under her skin." I laughed. "She doesn't need our approval, Georgia. She has all the men's. All of the men's, plus a whole television audience to boot." When I would ask Georgia carefully about her life with Brent, she would clam up and snap at me. "It will either work out or it won't," she said. "I'm no match for the competition. I told you. I've seen her. She's almost a carbon copy of Sheila. I swear I'm going to get even someday." I never tried to talk Georgia out of getting even because I never took her seriously. I was more worried about the despair and the drinking that seemed to encompass her. Her house was falling apart and her kids looked dazed and frightened. I had no idea what to do for her, and she resisted all attempts and offers I made to help her. One night, as we lay in bed, I told Charlie how worried I was about Georgia. He sighed. "Tina, my only love, you have to remember you can't get inside Georgia's head. She's looking to blame everything and everybody now for her unhappiness, everyone but herself. It isn't your fault or Brent's that she drinks." "Maybe Brent gives her good reasons to drink," I said. I heard him laugh, a deep chuckle. "Okay, maybe then all she has to do is tell Brent to leave or learn to deal with it some constructive way." "Oh, you men have all the answers," I grumbled. "Well, this one has a question," Charlie said. "How about it?" I turned over and curled up in his arms. "You always know the answer to that." The autumn days fell away like the leaves from the trees, and soon there were signs of the holidays showing up in store windows and home decorations. I was looking forward to the annual Christmas party given by Charlie's company. It was always an elegant affair. I tried to get Georgia into the spirit of the whole thing by urging her to come shopping with me. "I'm wearing black," she said, bluntly. "I think it fits the occasion and my mood." "Oh, Georgia, I wish you were more like your old self. I miss the carefree person you used to be." "I'm so sorry," she said sarcastically. "I don't seem to make anyone happy these days." "I want you to be happy. That's all I meant." Georgia snorted and rolled her eyes. "Just wait till the night of the party. I'm going to get that snotty, perfect Sheila." I really didn't think Georgia meant anything more than her usual empty threats. "Well, I know what you mean, Sheila. You know, I saw her in the grocery store around Thanksgiving. She was dressed in a pantsuit and heels, and her hair looked as if experts had just done it. Of course, I was wearing my jeans and a sweatshirt. Don't you look just so, I don't know, I guess comfortable is the word." I wanted to smack her, but instead I just smiled and walked away. "She always looks that great because she's always waiting for the next man. That's what predatory women always do. I'm glad she doesn't seem that interested in Charlie." Georgia looked at me, and her eyes were like hard black stones. "At least not when you're around," she said. I felt hurt and stung by her words. "Charlie would never," I started to say. "You should never say never," she said coldly. I meant to mention Georgia's threats about getting Sheila to Charlie, but I just never did. The time never seemed right. The party was held at a hotel in the city. It was fabulous, with a huge decorated tree. I did feel beautiful, and Charlie kept telling me I looked delicious. We were a little early, so we sat down at our assigned table and looked around for some friendly faces. "Guess who's sitting with us?" Charlie asked. "Georgia and Brent. This ought to be interesting." "I didn't know you liked John so much, or could it be Sheila you're looking forward to seeing?" I asked, keeping my voice light. "Oh, definitely John," Charlie said, sipping his drink. "I think he has fabulous legs." "Very funny," I replied, but I was in too good of a mood to be jealous of Sheila, that is, until she came over and sat down with us. I actually gasped when I looked up and saw her standing there smiling down at us. I glanced at Charlie and saw that his mouth was wide open. Sheila was stunning, dressed totally in silver, her gown, shoes, jewelry, and finally her hair. "Wow," Charlie said as he stared at her. "A man of 1,000 words, I quipped. "Wow, right back at you, Charlie," Sheila said as she slipped into her chair. "Hey, I'm here too," John said, clapping his hands. "Anyone think I deserve a wow? Maybe a bow wow," Charlie said, holding his glass up. "You look beautiful," I managed to say to Sheila. My heart was pounding with envy as I stared at her. "You look very nice yourself," she said with a syrupy voice. "I like the simple touch." I glanced down at my pink dress and suddenly it looked cheap and tacky. I could feel my cheeks burning with shame. And as I looked at Sheila, I thought to myself, "I hope Georgia does get you somehow, somewhere." Everyone seemed to arrive at the same time. Georgia looked very pretty with her black dress and her new slender figure. She and Brent barely spoke to one another. I was glad to have Georgia by my side because the rest of the table seemed so enchanted with everything. Sheila did or said that without Georgia, I would have felt like an outsider. Georgia had 2 quick drinks. Despite Brent glaring at her, she turned to me. "Well, how does it feel to be at the table of the queen of the prom?" She motioned her head toward Sheila. "I know she can be as perfect as she looks," I whispered rather savagely. "Look at the men drool. Even Charlie can't take his eyes off of her." "Let's hope his eyes are all you have to worry about," she said in the now familiar, cynical tone of hers. The waiter started serving our salads, but just as he did, Georgia whispered to me, "Excuse us, we have to go to powder our what's it?" "Charming," Sheila said. "Bite me," Georgia hissed. I took Georgia's arm with an apologetic smile and we walked to the restroom together. "She is obnoxiously beautiful," I agreed, sighing as I looked in the mirror. "Well, I'm going to see that she's just plain obnoxious," Georgia said. She picked up her black beaded evening bag and drew out a little white pill. "I'm going to slip this into her drink." I was shocked, then afraid. "No, don't do it, Georgia. You don't know what it might do to her. It's just too dangerous." "Relax. It isn't lethal. It won't even hurt her." "I don't want any part of it, Georgia," I said. "It's a crazy idea. You can't stop me." I knew I could stop her if we went back to the table, and I just told everyone there what she had in mind. But I didn't do it. I tried to tell myself it was nothing to do with me, really, and I didn't think Georgia would really go through with it. As long as I wasn't to blame, not really, it might be fun to see. The party was in full swing with people dancing and talking. There were a lot of people surrounding our table. The attraction was, without a doubt, Sheila. I sat down next to Charlie and had to nudge him. "I'm back," I said in a sing-songy voice. Charlie looked startled, but he smiled. I lost track of time and of Georgia in all the excitement. I got up and danced with Charlie, and we had a lot of fun. "We don't dance often enough," I whispered to him as he held me close. That's why you won't let me lead, I guess," he teased. "Am I leading?" I asked. "Only half the time." He pulled me close, and I felt the usual thrill of being next to him. "Here comes the dip," he said as he tilted me back. I didn't notice Georgia dancing at all, and Brent had disappeared somewhere into the crowd. I turned to Georgia. "Are you having any fun?" I asked. "In a minute I will be," she said with a wicked wink. "You didn't." "I did. Just watch." I glanced at Sheila as she sipped her drink. Nothing seemed to change in her perfect face. I realized I was hungry after all that dancing. Charlie came back and sat down. We were just starting to eat when the sound of a splash and a shout made us all jump. I looked over just as Sheila slipped face first, into her bowl of soup. I stared with my mouth open. For a split second, no one moved. Then John grabbed Sheila and pulled her face out of the hot liquid. If it hadn't been so terrible, it would have been funny. She had onions stringing out of her hair, and her face was red with blotches of broth clinging onto her nose. "I believe her makeup is running, don't you?" Georgia whispered to me with a horrible little laugh. A crowd gathered around us as they laid Sheila onto the floor. She was unconscious, and I was so terrified I couldn't move, let alone look at Georgia. She sat next to me in silence. Charlie rushed over and bent over Sheila to help. "Oh, God," I heard John say. "What could be wrong?" "Oh, no, Charlie, she just found out today she was pregnant." "Wake up, sweetheart, wake up." "Georgia, this is terrible," I managed to whisper to my friend, but I was whispering to an empty chair. Georgia was nowhere in sight. The paramedics came and took Sheila off on a stretcher. "I wonder what happened," he said. "She seemed fine." I couldn't speak. I couldn't even look at Charlie. A great big lump of guilt was forming in my throat. Finally, Charlie looked over at me and said, "Aren't you worried about her, Tina? I know there's been some jealousy with the women over Sheila's good looks, but you care about her, don't you? I mean, she's just starting out with a baby. Maybe she'll even die." "She won't die," I insisted a little shrilly. "Yes, I'm upset, but I don't want to talk about it, Charlie. It scared me too much." Charlie gave me a sweet smile of understanding. "Let's don't think the worst, then." The next day was Sunday, and it seemed to drag on forever. I wanted to call Georgia, but I didn't. I expected it to be her every time the phone rang, but she didn't call me either. The phone did ring a lot with people asking if we'd heard anything. No one seemed to have any news about her. We were eating lunch when the phone rang once again. "Just let it ring," I told Charlie. "Oh, good." Then the kids distracted me, and I didn't hear any more of the conversation until Charlie came back to the table. He was grinning when he said, "Sheila's fine, and the baby too." I breathed a deep sigh of relief. "Oh, I'm so glad to hear that," I said. Charlie looked at me strangely. "You were worried about her then? I thought you didn't care for her." "Don't be silly. Of course I was worried," I said. They think someone drugged her at the party." "Why do they think that?" "The blood tests showed it. She swears she hadn't taken any medication." "Wait," I said, standing up and grabbing his arm. "Is there going to be a police investigation?" Charlie gave me a direct Look, do you know something about this? He said quietly. No, no, I'm just curious. Well, they are investigating, but they don't think they have a chance of finding out who did this, if someone did it. There were just too many people there, and Sheila can't imagine anyone hating her that much. That's hard to imagine, I said, not looking at Charlie. I was relieved again when he sauntered off into the den. Later that day, I finally went over to George's house. I rang the bell, and Georgia answered, wrapped in a woolly robe and wearing slippers. Are you sick? I asked. No, but I'm sober. Brent left. He couldn't even wait till Christmas was over. She didn't ask me in. How are the kids? I asked. They're fine. Brent took them to spend Christmas with his family. I really can't talk now, Tina, she said as she started to close the door. Georgia, wait. Georgia looked me directly in the eyes and said calmly, I don't know what you're talking about. Then she shut the door in my face. Everything in our neighborhood seemed to change after the party. Brent sold the house and moved closer to his parents so they could help him with the kids. Sheila parlayed the party incident into a promotion at work. They didn't want him to sue the company, Charlie told me. Their lives became even more perfect and blessed. Charlie and I moved in March of the next year. He got offered a better job in a different part of the country, so we moved on. It was after our move and after we were settled and happy in our new home that I finally told Charlie the truth. I could have stopped Georgia, but I didn't even try. I've tried to put it out of my mind, but I feel like I lied to you by not admitting what I knew. Charlie was silent for a few moments, so I sat up and turned the lamp on. I looked down at him, and for the first time I thought I saw disappointment on his face as he returned my gaze. Are you disgusted with me? I asked softly. He rubbed my arm and said, No. I suspected Georgia was involved, but I wasn't sure. I just wanted to give you time to tell me what you knew when you thought it was time. I was a coward, I almost whimpered. I wanted to tell you the truth. Charlie sighed and reached for me. He wrapped me in his arms and nuzzled my neck. To tell the truth, you've always been worth the wait. I fell asleep that night with a renewed sense of gratitude for Charlie and for what I had been blessed with in my life. In fact, I thought my life was as close to being as perfect as possible. With the exception of me and Charlie, it was a good thing for both of us that we loved each other, imperfections and all. Okay, that's the end of that story, and that's going to do it for this romance program. Thank you always for listening. I've enjoyed reading to you. This has been Volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. Have a great week and take care. Bye-bye.